Hi, and welcome to the Autoblog Podcast, episode number 85. I'm your host, John Neff, and with me as they are every week is Damon Labyrinth and Alex Nunez. How are you guys doing this week?
Very well.
Super.
Recovering.
That's right. We are back from the Detroit Auto Show, the biggest event of the year for us, at least. And it was a good show for us. What did you guys think of the show in general?
I thought Alex? It was a little less exciting than last year's show.
I agree. Last year, what was the big thing last year?
Well, last year you had CTS, Malibu, you had the MKR.
Now, 2 years ago was the simultaneous Camaro and Challenger debuts. Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was '06, right? So.
That was, I think, the biggest show I've been to.
Well, Camaro was a surprise, too, wasn't it?
Not so much of a surprise, but a better kept secret, I think, than the Challenger. So I think, you know, we're going to see the production Challenger in Chicago early next month, so we didn't even get that in Detroit, and the production Camaro is pretty much not in the cards for this auto show season, we found out. So pretty much those two blockbusters were missing from this year's Detroit altogether, which I think kind of made the show suffer a little bit, but there were
some good things going on. However,
absolutely. It's,
you know, the trucks are arguably more important to the automakers than any of these other cars that we, you know, we're just talking about. It's just that they're not as sexy, you know, to talk about.
No, the wow factor is certainly not there with the trucks, and we're speaking of course the 2009 Ford F-150 and the 2009 Dodge Ram, both of which are all new. And
both of which are really nice, in my opinion.
Mad props to Dodge for, I think, upstaging the F-150, not only in the grand scale of its press conference, which, of course, if you weren't paying attention to the show, was basically filled with 115 actual head of cattle. This is the kind of cattle with giant horns, you know, sticking out 3 feet on either side.
It's really a miracle nobody was gored, you know, just even though these were like very docile animals and, you know, friendly, and
well, they were
pet them on the nose. But I mean, seriously, yeah, they're definitely show cattle. I talked to one of the people that was at their makeshift corral, which was a parking lot across from Joe Louis Arena, pretty much. That's what you saw in the background if you, you know, were standing by where they were kept. But
so yeah, they walk this herd of cattle, rental cattle, up the street in front of Cobble Hall, and the cattle part way, and, you know, two new examples of the 2009 Dodge Ram drive through. Of course, it's freezing outside.
It wasn't that cold.
No, it was that cold. It was.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was. I was outside smoking the whole time.
I was out there almost for the whole thing. It was not bad. It was a luxury.
For a California,
I mean, what are you
boy,
from Cleveland? Where? I mean, what are you from Florida? Complaining that it's cold? I mean, you're from the Midwest.
I have thin skin. What can I say? Regardless, there was a little bit of excitement in the press conference because the steer started to get a little rowdy, started to do a little steer crowd surfing.
A little extra friskiness
in the middle.
A little hanky panky. There was something for everyone.
The rent-a-cowboys got out their whips. There was some cracking, whip cracking.
It was really ridiculous.
And that was as Jim Press from Toyota was talking about the Ram. So, you know, I think the actual cattle stole the show from the Ram a little bit, but nevertheless got, you know, the Ram on the front of all the papers the next day. But the Ram, I think, deserved some top billing because, you know, the F-150 is all new. It's of course better than the last F-150 in every way. It can tow more, larger payload, better engines.
Doesn't necessarily look better, except in with the lower trim levels.
Right. Well, I mean, that was the big news for the F-150 was that there was a new top trim level called a Platinum, that will be, you know, ridiculously expensive and
Mark LT replacement, pretty much.
Yeah, basically, you know, it'd be the epitome of a luxury truck, which couldn't be sold under the Lincoln brand, so I'm not sure why they think Ford can do it. Nevertheless, that was kind of the big addition. For the F-150, there's no more V6 power plants, just V8s, even though the average fuel economy of the F-150s has gone up. And plus, they also announced there will be a diesel engine soon, and there will be an EcoBoost engine, you know, turbocharged, direct inject, probably a V6. So that's pretty interesting. But, I mean, basically more of the same. It's just, you know, the F-150 amped up, you know, to the next level. Whereas the Ram, I thought, had some really innovative stuff, not the least of which was the availability of a coil spring rear suspension, which on a full-size pickup is pretty much unheard of. You know, we've always had leaf springs back there for towing and the like, but Dodge totally took a new turn, basically recognizing that, you know, a half ton should do what a half ton does, and a half ton doesn't need to tow what a three-quarter ton pickup can tow. It doesn't need to tow 11,000 pounds. You know, they're perfectly happy sticking at, you know, 9,000 to 10,000 pounds. And they can do that with a coil spring suspension that has better ride and handling, I think is lighter, but is going to be better as a daily driver, you know, trying to get back into that market of people who buy trucks, not necessarily, you know, to build a house with, but, you know, to use on a daily basis.
And what was the name of the open, the
Ram box.
Ram box. Thank you very much. That's that little cubicle that they made, which, you know, in hindsight, just seems like a no-brainer. It seems like such an obvious addition to make, but I thought that was a really, really kind of innovative cue. But that's, of course, been kind of Dodge's thing recently. So
the Ram box is the storage in the bed rails. So basically, you know, the bed rails open up, and I think nobody ever did it before because the bed rails have to be pretty thick, or you have to kind of, you know, flare out the fenders far enough to actually have some meaningful storage in there.
And the storage is definitely meaningful.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were showing, you know, a football,
like a basketball,
soccer balls,
and, you know, other stuff.
I mean, yeah,
that's
filling up
big enough to hold some useful stuff.
So yeah, well, I think it just makes the Ram even more attractive package. And the thing is that, yeah, of course these trucks are important, but the truck segment is shrinking. I mean, all four big truck makers, I'm excluding Nissan here, you know, they're probably going to sell less trucks in 2008 than they did in 2007, maybe except for the Tundra. But I think the Ram might now have a shot to actually sell more if A, it gets the 2009 Ram to dealers very, very quickly, and B, if it can get that message across that, you know, we're kind of a truck that you can happily live with every day, whereas, you know, the F-150 has nowhere to go but down. I mean, it's sold so many units for so long. Ford's going to have, it's going to be impossible for them to increase the number of F-150s they sell, even with an all-new, you know, brand-new F-150 that's, like I said, better in every way. It's just, I mean, the best they can hope for is to stem a sales slide in 2008 rather than build on something. So yeah, the trucks were huge news, but I think they kind of lack the excitement of a Camaro or a Challenger like we had 2 years ago. Probably the most exciting car for me was the Cadillac CTS Coupe. Because even though we knew it was coming, it was still, I think, a pretty big surprise. I don't think we knew.
I mean, they
it was
didn't
coming
confirm it until the night before,
right?
So, and it was a big deal, and it is a cool car, and it is going to be built. So that was a good job by GM, at least preserving some semblance of excitement, you know, for their second day press conferences. And what are you going to say? I mean, it's a two-door CTS. It looks like a CTS up front, and then it, you know, goes into this very angular, you know, coupe body in the back, and I just hope they do a V-series based on the coupe also.
I'm sure that's just a matter of time. I mean, that was the one model that was always kind of missing from the CTS lineup, was we had, you know, a lower-end model, a mid-range model, the V model, and a coupe was always just seemed like the obvious next choice to make, you know.
And, well, I think, speaking of the V, before we, and the, obviously the V series sedan was unveiled also, and that thing's pretty incredible. In person, it's really impressive, and it's got to be pretty awesome to drive. I have to believe, you know, when you consider that it's essentially a detuned version of the engine that's in the ZR1 Corvette, that's going to be a pretty badass machine.
Yeah, I think Cadillac is definitely pumping on all cylinders right now. They also debuted in CES the week before the Provoke concept that will eventually be, you know, the BRX or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if they'll keep the Provoke name or not, which, you know, basically Cadillac's small CUV, probably what the SRX should have been, even though I'm not dogging the SRX because that was a pretty fine vehicle. It just never caught on. But, you know, the Provoke will definitely hit, I think, the sweet spot of the CUV market, the entry-level luxury CUV market. So, but, the CTS Coupe was just drop-dead sexy. I mean, if you thought the CTS is good-looking, oh, my God, I could stare at the CTS Coupe all day. Speaking of which, drop-dead sexy, the Audi V12 TDI.
The R8?
Yes, the R8.
The R8 V12 TDI was just one of the more impressive of the show. Like I said, there was a lot of little kind of gems hidden there. I really like the kind of NACA duct that was mounted atop to feed the engine out back. I'm assuming
I didn't even notice that until you pointed that out.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to see because unless you're tall or, you know, have a better view of it. But I thought that was just really, really cool. And we've had a few more shots of surface in the meantime that have kind of highlighted it. And Drew's gallery of the R8 was one of my favorite shots of the show. Such gorgeous photos of that. I hope everybody checked out.
Best photos from the show came from that press conference.
Absolutely. But yeah, that was a really neat one. They also introduced what the TTS, which didn't really get a lot of attention.
The only reason it didn't get attention is because of the car that was parked next to it.
Right, exactly.
The TTS is very impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you take the Audi R8, it's the 6.0 liter V12 diesel, 500 horsepower and 23 miles per gallon combined.
And 730 pounds of torque.
Nothing within 500 feet of that will get a second look.
Sitting in the media center and talking to Eric Bryant, you know, he goes, that R8 is almost a smack in the face to everybody else in the store. He goes, where else in this country can you get something that puts up those kind of numbers that, that's not a heavy duty, you know, pickup truck. Uh-huh. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, 738 pound feet of torque. That's definitely Super Duty territory. And like I said, it's a concept, but God, I hope that happens.
I mean, that's what's interesting about that concept is that with the new cafe and all this other stuff that's, you know, coming down the pike, you know, in the next 12 years. I mean, it's going to take forever to actually get there, and there's a lot of stuff that can still happen between now and then, but, you know, that's a perfect example of something, you know, that an automaker can, you know, put out that is
absolutely,
that seems completely reasonable in terms of, you know, an environment where increased fuel economy is required.
Well, I think with the new CAFE standards looming, even if they are looming, you know, 12 years away, all ideas are on the table. So, I mean, you're going to see automakers coming up with some pretty interesting ideas to meet the new CAFE standards, whether they be diesel or hybrid or whatever.
Right.
And this is, you know,
biofuel, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that
if you're going to meet it this way, by all means, let's, I can't wait for 2020.
Just to kind of play off the diesel thing, there were two kind of important ones, and John and I are both kind of fans of diesel, that we wanted to see, and that was the BMW 335D and the X5 X-Drive 35D, I think. Yeah.
By the way, we're the worst
nomenclature ever. Yeah.
Ever.
But, ever. And the other one, which I think was even, it was just as important, was Honda finally showing off its ID.Tech clean diesel, which is going to be finding its way into the Acura TSX next year. And possibly, I think, what's the or the RDX in 2010?
Well, no, I mean Honda.
I'm sure that ID.Tech will be in the TSX. I mean, because I mean, think about it. That engine is probably, you know, they're going to use that everywhere, I think. And the European Accord is, you know, the ideal place to, you know, drop your diesel. And we all know what the TSX really is. So
a European Accord,
exactly. Other interesting ones with the Hyundai Genesis. We finally saw the production version of that. And when is that going on sale again?
I don't know the exact date, but I will say in person, it does sell itself. I mean, it looks richer and more well-built than I think you'd expect. A, that you'd expect a Hyundai to be, but even more than you'd expect.
impressive fit and finish.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we did, we noticed that there was another Genesis on display, a V6 model that had a different grill than the one we thought was going to be there, because it had the Hyundai badge in it, the Flying H logo.
Yeah, the traditional, you know, look, you know, to it, rather than that.
Very, and the one we were shown ahead of time had this kind of anonymous, but, you know...
The Klingon grill.
High
the Klingon
gloss chrome
forehead, you know.
Right. It basically looks like a Klingon forehead grill. so we noticed this, and we did a post on Autoblog with a poll asking which grill people liked. And quite honestly, I thought it would either be much more evenly split, or that the grill with the logo would win. And people actually really, really took to the grill without the logo, the Klingon head grill, and said, you know, you don't need to say or scream that it's a Hyundai. That may not help you. And they said the grill looked fine. It looked, you know, upscale. So I think that says something about how well the Genesis can do, regardless of the fact that it's a Hyundai.
So, aside from the Genesis, one of the other models that was that's slated for production was the RX-8, and of course that was kind of really boring, to say the least. However, on the Japanese automaker front, I think we discussed this there, the Mitsubishi Rally Art was one of the vehicles that I kind of took to. And of course, that's kind of got the it's got the detuned Evo 10 motor, the dual clutch gearbox from the Evo 10, supposedly the Evo 9's all wheel drive system with the active center diff and all that fun stuff. And hopefully, that's going to slot in right around 25K. All things
that's
being
some
equal,
quality parts bin engineering right there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, if anybody can learn from it, and of course Mitsubishi's doing their best to, you know, make as much money as possible with the minimal amount of output right now, so I gotta give them props for offering that up, because as well as the WX has sold, you know, Mitsubishi's been losing money hand over fist, not offering something to compete with it, just having that step from the really horrible Eclipse that we have right now up to the Evo, so there wasn't really anything to slot in between. Oh, the Passat CC. I never got your guys' opinion on that at the show. What'd you guys think?
Here's my take on the Passat CC. Unnecessary.
Do tell, Alex. Unnecessary?
I think it's great looking. I would, if I was Volkswagen, I would make that the Passat, and then just have the Passat, the CC be the Passat, and then the Passat wagon be the Passat wagon. I don't know who's going to buy, honestly, who's going to buy the CC, and... You know, what's it going to cost? You know, it's a very premium looking vehicle. So I don't know where it slots in Volkswagen's hierarchy.
Well, I mean,
it's not that I don't like it. I think it's cool. But the thing that I like about the Passat CC is that it's the first Volkswagen that is going to have a TSI power plant in the U.S. And I'm sure it'll be the first of many. As everybody readjusts their lineup, you know, to, you know, maximize fuel economy. But seriously, I really don't know. I don't know how that's going to fit overall.
The problem is they're trying to fill the gap between the Passat and the reintroduction of the Phaeton, and that's kind of where it's going to slot in. I don't know how much, you know, they're going to be asking what the cost of entry is going to be for the CC, but I think they're just trying to get something in between the Phaeton and the base Passat.
Yeah, that Passat CC is going to compete with the A6. I mean, I don't know. It seems a little self-defeating to me.
No, it's not going to compete with anything. And the problem is because U.S. customers don't believe Volkswagens should cost that much. I mean, Volkswagen in the U.S. is not Volkswagen in Europe. And VW as a whole needs to get that. And U.S. customers won't pay for the Phaeton again. They're not going to pay $80,000 for a Volkswagen. And guess what? They're not going to pay $50,000 for a Volkswagen like this. For basically what's going to be a Passat with a smaller interior. I do think it's good looking. I think it's a great design. I agree that it should be the Passat and not this kind of annex to it. And I actually heard someone say in the same breath that the CC was going to be a competitor or within the same class as the Mercedes-Benz CLS.
Oh, come
and
on.
The Porsche Panamera and the Aston Martin Rapide. And I almost,
that's ridiculous.
I almost swallowed my tongue. I'm like, are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
I mean, this.
First of all, the CLS is a better looking car than the Passat CC.
Amen.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about, you know, this class of four-door coupes, and it was invented by Mercedes-Benz with the CLS. And quite frankly, I think the Porsche Panamera and the Aston Martin Rapide, they don't look like four-door coupes. They look like sedans, you know, whereas I think the CLS genuinely takes that sloping roof.
The CLS is a really pretty car.
Absolutely. I think all these others are just really expensive sedans, and I think the CLS pioneered it and really is the defining car for that segment. The Passat CC, is that what it's called? Am I getting
it
right?
Yes, it's called the Passat CC. Yeah.
It is not, I mean, I don't, the word coupe doesn't even enter my head when I look at it. I see sedan. I see, oh, look, it's a really fancy Passat.
It's nice looking. I don't think it's different enough than the regular Passat, which is why I think it should be the regular Passat. And really, Volkswagen would be better served bringing over the Polo or something like the Golf Plus or one of the Cross Golf or, you know, some of these cool things that they offer in Europe that they don't offer here, that they can offer at a price point where it's going to have mass appeal. I mean, the Passat CC, you were immediately striking.
Do you know why they don't? The reason is because there's a huge profit margin on the Passat CC, and you can basically make no money importing the Polo. You know, they will import the Polo because they have to meet stricter...
They're going to have to. Right?
Yeah, right. Stricter cafe standards, but they're not going to make any money off them. Meanwhile, they're going to rake in, you know, tons of money on each CC sold, even though, mark my words, they're not going to sell very many.
I said, it's a nice car. I just don't really get the... I don't know why.
So what about the wonderful vaporware that was the Fisker?
Oh my god!
Okay,
I think it's awesome looking. Fisker Karma is my favorite. My favorite line walking around the show floor was, you know, I walked by the Fisker Karma with John, and it was like only the second time that I had seen it walking around the floor. And I'm like, is that supposed to be a solar panel on the roof? And because it has this, you know, thing, you know, that looks like a solar panel on the roof. And John just goes, yes. But that's actually what we call a sticker. You know, so,
I believe I used the quote unquote.
Quote, yes. Yeah. Air quotes on
yeah,
one.
You did. Exactly. No. And you did the thing with your fingers, too, to make the quotes as you walk by.
Right. No, and I think what scares me more about that, you know, I love to see a vehicle because it's a really pretty vehicle. There's no doubt about that. But the fact that they're already taking pre-orders on it and they've already outlined a price, which is $80,000, with basically no real credence to anything. There's no proof of concept there except
that they have a battery.
I mean, exactly. There's nothing there at all.
Get this, though. A reader emailed me because he was reading the Fisker post and noticed that he was at the show and went there, and he noticed that if you wanted to pre-order a Fisker Karma, you could only do so with your credit card, which happens to be illegal in Michigan and maybe many other states.
Really?
So he wanted us to check up on it and see if Fisker was doing something illegal. So I told him to go find online where it said it was illegal, and we do a post on it, but... because I like to have other people do my work for me.
Right, naturally.
but I thought that was funny. And basically, I agree, I'll put it this way, it's uncool to ask for thousands of dollars from people with absolutely nothing to show for it yet, except a model with many parts that are stickers instead of actual parts. I mean, the gauges were stickers and, you know, decals and great, you have the design down. That's wonderful. Right. You know, I can draw a design on a napkin right now if you want me to. and they're basically going to build this using the same type of series hybrid technology as the Chevy Volt. And you want me to believe that you're going to come out with this super luxury series hybrid sedan at the, you know, by the same time GM's going to come out with a Volt, and they have how many hundreds of engineers working on it?
Right, and GM, yeah, exactly. I mean, GM, which actually has resources, and Fisker is a coach builder, you know.
Right.
You know, honestly, I would, you know what, Fisker? Build this car with a traditional engine and sell it, because you'll sell it that way too, because it's a beautiful car.
Sell it while you can before these new cafe standards hit, and make some money to fund actually building the hybrid version.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it is a pretty car, no doubt about it. But it's, like I said, it's vaporware as long as that series hybrid powertrain is in there. It's just not going to happen by 2010 or 11. You know.
Skipping back now. Enough with the Fisker. It's with the sticker for the roof. I mean, enough already. Skipping back to stuff that actually, you know, was at the show that was in running order. you know, Damon touched on the RX-8, and the RX-8 was, you know, fine and all, but it was completely upstaged by the car park next to it, which, to me, in my opinion, and I don't understand why this was an honorable mention in our top five. I didn't talk about this with either of you. But seriously, the Mazda Ferrari, if that wasn't the best car on the show, even over the Cadillac CTS, then I don't know what was, because...
No, I top three this was the race CTS, car the Ferrari, that actually and the TDI.
Was legit.
No, that's. I mean, it was built on a kind of a leftover
on a Courage. It's on a. It was on a Courage LMS, you know, chassis with. I mean, there's abundant video of the car running. There's actually a video on the web of the car running inside Kobo, and it's like one of these things that makes all your hair stand up on its end. Completely awesome. They should. This is by far the coolest execution of that. What the hell was the design language
swoopy,
called?
Swoopy Guild design language.
Yeah, what was the first car that had it?
It's Flow, Nagare, that, all that.
Yeah, thank you. Nagare, Nagare design language. You know what? I'll take that. Listen, build a car that looks like that, Mazda, and call it an RX-9 or RX... I don't care what you call it.
That's a Halo
is awesome.
Car.
Yeah.
That's a Halo
car.
God.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You could take on the GTR and the Corvette with a design like that, and, you know, probably not if you put a rotary engine in it, but still.
Well, I mean, and the bigger concern is, you know, European crash, pedestrian crash standards too could be a little bit of a problem. But no, as far as I think it's of all the concepts that Mazda has come out with in the last 2 years using that same Flow design language, this is in the top two. The other one that I was like,
this one is the pinnacle of that.
You
language.
Know what? I'm not so sure about that because I really like the one that debuted in Detroit the same year the Camaro and Challenger came out. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Yeah, that one was more of a production I mean, we'll probably see that. I forget the name of it, well, too, but it was like the three-door hatch.
Right. As far as vehicles that I can see actually making in the marketplace, and of course, you know, by all accounts at this point, the new Mazda 3 is actually going to be the first vehicle to start incorporating these Flow design elements in it, which I'm really, really looking forward to. I think it's some of the most compelling stuff outside of, let's say, you know, Cadillac's art and science motif they've got going on that's actually finally being well executed.
To answer your question, Alex, the reason it wasn't included in our top five was because all the other cars had some connection to a production vehicle, and this one didn't at all, really. I mean, we couldn't see any connection to kind of an actual car someone could go and buy within the next 5 years, but we couldn't leave it kind of off the list and not mention it at all. So
you can't leave the coolest car in the building off the list.
Right. So we didn't, we gave it an honorable mention, a well-deserved one.
What else did we like from the show? How about the Lincoln MKT? I wasn't there. Damon, you went to that.
Yeah, I was at the press conference. Like I think I said in my original post, I think it's probably one of the better uses of the new Lincoln design language. I think, you know, the exterior was executed beautifully, but, you know, leave that to Horbury and his crew. The interior, I thought, was just completely gaudy. I mean, there's that line you cross with show cars where you've got these really, really crazy elements inside that are at least stylish, and this one just totally was not. It was the antithesis of that. It just looked bad.
I totally know where you're coming from.
I disagree with you on the exterior. I think it looks like a beached whale, and I think it completely damages Lincoln's forward momentum, any that it may have had with the new MKS sedan.
See, I think it's going to smooth out if and when that comes into production, and it's just really a matter of time before we see something that's going to replace what the edge based Lincoln is right now, the MKX.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to replace that. It's gonna go in addition to that. I mean, it'll
be a totally separate type of thing. Yeah,
well, that's totally stupid. Then why would they bring out another
Ford
model?
Is all about having too many crossovers right now.
Yeah, you know? they're gonna spread that to all their brands.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
This thing is going to be giant, and it's like I said, in my opinion, ugly. And Cadillac is just going to wipe the floor with Lincoln for another 5 years. Because
now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, because they're relying on these big CUVs that they think everybody wants. Meanwhile, Cadillac's going out there and making an awesome reputation with the CTS, jumping feet first into the most difficult segment it could jump into, and basically throwing fists And what do we get from Lincoln, which is the MKS, which, you know, all right, it looks okay, but basically it's going to compete with Acuras, you know, while everybody else is going to be just drooling over the CTS and other, you know,
and whatever Cadillac comes up with sedans to replace the DTS and STS, you know, right. We still have that, whatever that, you know, winds up being is bound to be interesting as well.
We got to cut the podcast short this week, but I wanted to end on the Corvette ZR1.
Oh, before we go to the Corvette ZR1, the other car that's also important, the Ford Verve, which I finally saw in person. I know you guys saw the European one.
Yeah.
That Ford cannot produce this car quickly enough. It is so good looking in person.
Absolutely.
Both the sedan and the hatch. The hatchback, they had the European hatchback there also. This car is everything.
But let me focus on what you just said. Ford cannot produce this vehicle fast enough. That's true. Yeah. Ford cannot produce this vehicle fast enough.
Well, no, the Europeans are going to get it next year, and while we wait for 2010.
Right, exactly, while we wait for years. So the ZR1 debuted actually before the show, the night before the show opened to the press at the GM Style event, which is basically a fashion show where the cars, you know, are driven out on stage. And celebrities walk next to them. And that was unfortunate, really unfortunate, because I think it really got overlooked at the auto show itself because it never debuted to the press at the auto show. I mean,
yeah, it was just parked there.
It was just parked there, yeah. I mean, and this is the king of the hill. I mean, this is the Corvette ZR1, for Christ's sake.
The ZR1 got a better introduction at Barrett-Jackson over the weekend than it did at the Detroit Auto Show.
Exactly, because people made a fuss over it. The style event was, you know, kind of closed to a limited number of people, and it was just, you know, the press who could be there. Of course, we were there, but, you know, it sucked that all of us couldn't have gone to the press conference for this vehicle. It could have been epic, the amount of buzz they could have created for their, you know, 600 plus horsepower.
Right, but if they also but per usual with the Detroit Auto Show, if they could have actually kept that under wraps until then, it would have been a different story. I mean, even despite all the spy photos and all that stuff, if they would have been able to keep that under wraps until then, not release specs, not release anything, it would have been great. But they have to give.
Oh, that would have been the Camaro of 2008.
Exactly. But you know, this is the world we live in, which is unfortunate. And on that note.
Yeah, let's. We have to cut this short, unfortunately, for this week. But I'm glad we got the show in. As always, please visit autoblog.com for all your daily automotive news. And if you would, please also subscribe to our little Autoblog podcast by going to iTunes and searching for Autoblog. Or you can find us in the automotive section, which is in Games and Hobbies. And please leave us comments on the post where we publish the podcast. Review our podcast on iTunes. Let us know if you love it or hate it. And we'll try to make it better for you. So until next time, everybody have a good week.
Adios.
Hold on a second. We're going to pause because I think we lost Alex.
No, I'm back. I just came back. I was lost here. But now I'm found. What were we even talking about?
We were talking about the Genesis.
Anyway, after the Genesis, probably one of the
giggity.
What?